This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. On the program today, we're going to take a look at what makes a neighborhood a great neighborhood. We're going to talk about neighborhood success stories. Our guest is Jay Walljasper. He's a senior fellow of the Project for Public Spaces. He's also the author of The Great Neighborhood Book, A Do-It-Yourself Guide to Placemaking. He also happens to be a native of Urbana. Listeners, I look forward to your telephone calls. Join us with your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455-800-222-WILL. The Great Neighborhood Book is published by New Society Publishers. And let me tell you a bit more about our guest. He writes extensively on community and urban issues. And Jay Walljasper is also a former editor of the Utney Reader and is now executive editor of Ode Magazine. Again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to join our conversation about neighborhoods in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Join us with a question, a comment. Maybe you'd tell us about a neighborhood story, a story from your neighborhood. What's the best neighborhood you've ever lived in? Give us a call. Join us in our conversation this afternoon with Jay Walljasper. Jay, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome. Greetings from Urbana.
Yes. There's lightning there in the middle of February.
we've had a little bit of everything. We've had fog, rain, snow. And we're doing fog, rain, and snow again this week.
Oh, my. Well, I'm up in Minneapolis, and we've had snow here, and we have caucus night here as well. So so a lot of political stuff happening in Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Project for Public Spaces.
Sure. Project for Public Spaces has been around for about 30 years, and the focus of the organization is really pretty simple. They exist to kind of help neighbors, citizens get together and improve their communities. And the focus of the organization is really creating better places in communities, places where people can gather, can hang out. That can be parks, that can be main streets, that can be public buildings, it can be a whole range of things, but just places that are public, where everyone can go, enjoy themselves, run into their friends, and strengthen the sense of community in that place.
Yeah. One of my favorite success stories in the Great Neighborhood book is the North Hollywood Transit Art District.
yeah.
What a story.
Yeah.
That's a great public place.
Yeah, and just, and again, you think of Los Angeles as kind of being the place with no there. It's just all freeways and everybody in their cars. But actually, it has one of the best bus systems, one of the most well-ridden bus systems in the country. And there was this kind of bleak bus stop in North Hollywood, which is a part of the town that was once kind of down on its luck, and now it's kind of coming back in a big way. So they decided to, the community just thought, well, we can do something to spruce this place up. And they created not just a more attractive bus stop, but one that's kind of almost an artistic project.
Yeah. So, and you can, and there's food, and there's, it's...
Yeah, it's like a piazza in Italy or something. It's kind of a place where people want to gather. And I think people are hungry for that. I mean, we all spend too much time on our computers, in our houses, in our cars, and we're just hungry to have a spot where we can run into people we know. And it doesn't have to be your best friend, but just someone. Get to know the people that you live among, and that kind of enhances your life.
Yeah. Do you think our interest in neighborhoods is on the increase?
Yeah, I think it's on the increase in a big way. I think neighborhoods are the scale at which I think you can actually get things accomplished. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with kind of politics and with kind of international and national affairs. But, boy, in a neighborhood, you can get together with the folks that you live among and really anything's almost possible.
Yeah. And one of the things you say in the book is you can just start with petunias.
Yes. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Just planting some flowers somewhere can really help kind of turn a place around. Having a potluck dinner with your neighbors can kind of create a spirit of community.
And maybe you would tell us about the fellow who, I think he's a Canadian, he put a bench in his front yard.
Yeah, this is kind of my favorite story from the book because it's so simple. There's a guy named Dave Marachi, lives in Mississauga, Ontario, which is actually a rather large city, but it's a suburb of Toronto, so no one's ever heard of it. And he went to a PPS meeting because PPS was doing some work up in Mississauga about kind of making the city have more of a sense of identity and more just be a better city. And he heard about the power of a bench, you know, that people need places to sit down. That's how it makes places more comfortable, more enjoyable for us. So he had this idea. He was going to tear down the fence in his front yard and put up a bench. And he was a little nervous about this because he kind of feared what the neighbors would think. And, you know, would this bench end up being something that attracted problems? But in fact, he did it. His neighbors kind of looked at him quizzically as he was building it. But the bench really helped kind of transform his block. The first thing he noticed was that older people were suddenly out taking walks again because they had a pit stop. They had a place where they could sit down and relax and rest their feet for a few minutes. And then kids started hanging out there, you know, waiting for the school bus in the morning and things like that. And before long, a couple of these neighbors, who he was kind of anxious about what they'd think of this crazy idea of his, were building their own benches. So on this one little block, in this, you know, there's nothing, Mississauga was just standard-issue tract houses from the 70s and 80s. I mean, there's nothing extraordinary about it, but extraordinary things happened because of the kind of the creativity and you know, I think a little bit of the small-scale courage of Dave Marachi.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what kind of neighborhood did you grow up in Urbana, but one of the things that I like about my neighborhood in Urbana is that it's really front yard focused.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We do porch swings and porches, and often the houses sit closer to the sidewalk than in other areas of the community.
Yeah, that's great. What neighborhood do you live in?
I live in the Carl Park neighborhood.
Okay, yeah, that actually was my favorite neighborhood when I was growing up, and I often I've talked about it when I'm speaking on these subjects. It was a wonderful neighborhood. I grew up a little farther south and east. I lived on Philo Road for a number of years, then on Berkwood Court East. And both of those neighborhoods were more kind of backyard neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of fun in the backyard. But one of the things I notice here in Minneapolis is there's a bit of a front yard renaissance that people, you know, like most places, people kind of in the 50s or the 60s kind of retreated into the backyard because of traffic on the streets and things like that. But more and more people are kind of coming, you know, dragging their Adirondack chairs out to the front yard, you know, because you can kind of sit there and, you know, enjoy a refreshment and wave to the neighbors. And there's certainly times you want the privacy that a backyard offers, but a lot of the time it's kind of fun to be out on the street and see what's going on. And when you have people looking on the streets, that has a big effect. It improves, you know, it improves the sense of community. It diminishes social isolation, and it's actually a good way to fight crime. Yeah, when there's people out on the streets watching what's going on, you know, the wrongdoers are going to find a different place to, you know, do their trouble.
Yeah, and if you talk to people and you get to know them,
exactly,
that's also a really good thing to do. I want to tell you, back to the story about the fellow that put the bench in his front yard. A couple of years ago, someone we knew went through a real rough bout of cancer, and coming back from it, he underwent a lot of chemo. And his neighbors, part of his getting back into good health was taking a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so the neighbors who loved this guy, every couple of houses they'd put out a chair.
That's a wonderful story. If I do a second edition of the book, I'd love to include that. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because you hit on the two things that I consider sort of the two most important points in neighborhood building, one of which is building, you know, giving people a place to sit. The second of which is that it's important to walk. You know, that's the way you really kind of get to know your territory. That's the way you get to know who else lives there. You appreciate a neighborhood more when you're walking through it. It's hard to really enjoy the little splendid things in a neighborhood when you're in your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can honk at your, you know, you can honk at a neighbor from behind your windshield, but it's not the same as just stopping and having a brief little chat on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Well, we've got a listener who would like to join in the discussion this afternoon, so let's do that. Our guest this afternoon is Jay Wall Jasper. He's a senior fellow of the Project for public spaces and the author of the Great Neighborhood book, a do-it-yourself guide to placemaking. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question, a comment, a story about a neighborhood with a telephone call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a listener calling in this afternoon from Belgium, Illinois, line 4. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Or good afternoon. Yes, I would like to suggest or at least mention that probably the most famous city for neighborhoods has got to be San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go there for the sights. They miss the neighborhoods if they don't walk around.
I mean, yeah.
The phenomenal neighborhoods there. And you can walk to every one of them. Everyone has an interesting little aspect about it. They're just it's phenomenal neighborhoods.
Yeah, and I think the neighborhood, people's pride in their neighborhoods has really been one of the things that's made San Francisco such an interesting, such a distinctive city that when they wanted to rip up the cable cars, people said no. And when they, you know, people patronized their local businesses still rather than going kind of the big box stores. Ode Magazine is based out there, so I've been spending a lot of time in San Francisco through the years. And as much as I go out there, I still often discover a new neighborhood that I didn't know about behind a hill somewhere. I was in a neighborhood called Potrero Hill, which is just a charming neighborhood. Yeah, so San Francisco is a great neighborhood city. Toronto is another great neighborhood city. Even towns that aren't quite thought to be, you know, kind of romantic kind of places. But Pittsburgh is a city that's very proud of its neighborhoods. And in a lot of listings, Pittsburgh, you know, despite not being the wealthiest, most prosperous city in America, ranks up there as one of the great places to live. And I think it's that spirit of neighborhoods that makes that happen. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. We also have a listener now ready to go in Champaign on line 1. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Hi.
I can barely hear you.
Well, we can hear you fine, so go ahead. All right.
Well, I'd like to just throw in that the leash laws around have made for more socialization in neighborhoods as well. You meet a lot of people that you'd never know anywhere else out walking your dog.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's one of the chapters I have in my book called Let Your Neighbor Go to the Dogs.
Yeah.
Because that gets you out on the streets. And, you know, curiously, the things that make a neighbor good for dogs also make it good for kids and make it good for everyone.
Yeah, that's very true. And it also keeps the sidewalks cleaner.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind having a bench or so around somewhere when I go out to walk my dogs.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
You know, it's interesting. We were just talking about San Francisco, but there's one of the neighbors in San Francisco, for some reason, the dogs have designated a certain corner where there's a video store as kind of the center of the neighborhood. The dogs all gather there, and, of course, so do their owners. And the guy that owns the video store thought, well, this isn't a bad thing. He put down a couple of benches, and so it's almost like a little bit of town square. And it was really the dogs that sort of made it all happen.
Well, I've liked what I've seen in England as well, where they have a place for tying your dog up outside if you're just going in to, like, pick up a newspaper or a couple of grocery items. I think that's pretty useful.
Yeah.
I mean, it also makes you socialize your dog.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I'll hang up and listen. It's a very interesting program.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. Other telephone calls are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, J. Wall Jasper. He's a senior fellow of the Project for Public Spaces and the author of the Great Neighborhood book, A Do-It-Yourself Guide to Placemaking. This afternoon, we're talking about what makes a neighborhood a great neighborhood, and we're talking about neighborhood success stories. In the comeback of downtown Champaign, the sidewalk has played a huge role in terms of dining out and sitting out at a cafe, a bar, a restaurant. I think that has really been critical to the comeback of downtown Champaign, which is looking wonderful.
Oh, that's great. It's been a few years since I've been back, so that wasn't the case last time I visited, so that's great to hear.
It's booming.
And it's true. The sidewalk cafe, I think, in some ways, is one of the symbols of kind of people, again, sort of reclaiming their neighborhoods, reclaiming their cities. And it's funny because when I grew up, you know, not so long ago in Champaign-Urbana, I don't think there was hardly a sidewalk cafe in the whole city. And that was true everywhere. And today, you know, today, even in Minneapolis, where it's pretty chilly, there's still places that have the sidewalk tables out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have heaters there and things like that. And, you know, it's just one of those, it's one of kind of life's pleasures. And that's really what fixing up your neighborhood is about. It's not work. It's not duty. Sure, it takes a little bit of effort, but it's really about just sort of reclaiming some of the sense of pleasure that really belongs to us. And that, why shouldn't we have great places to walk and great places to sit and great places to hang out with our friends?
Yeah. Well, I think it started downtown, in downtown Champaign. It was one storefront at a time, and somebody opened a cafe, and then they put chairs and tables out on the street, and they got an okay from the city for that. And then the next thing just kind of rolled and rolled and rolled, and now people are, there's a couple of, you know, there's a brand new residential business tower going up downtown.
Wow.
So you have to come and visit us, Jay.
Yeah, I really should. It's funny, I once had a meeting with a guy who had been mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, during the 1960s and 70s, and he was, you know, quite an outspoken politician and did a lot of kind of quite unusual things in Madison, but he said the hardest thing of all the things that he accomplished was trying to get sidewalk cafes in. You know, this was the early 1970s, and like the city health department was convinced that you know, it was the worst thing since the bubonic plague. So there was really, it took a lot of organizing, it took a lot of people's time and energy to do something as simple as to make it legal for someone to actually enjoy a plate of pasta out on the sidewalk.
Yeah. How did you become a neighborhood activist?
Well, I've been a journalist my whole adult life, and I found that the subjects that more and more interested me were about what makes cities tick, what makes them work, what makes them not work. And then as I kept exploring that subject, I realized that cities really are just simply kind of a quilt made up of neighborhoods, and that a city kind of fails or succeeds by the quality of what happens in those neighborhoods. So that's what intrigued me about the subject. And Minneapolis is a real neighborhood-oriented city, with actually the neighborhood boards here have quite a lot of power to make changes in what happens in the community and things like that. My wife was actually president of our neighborhood association. And so I just kind of, it was based a lot on my own personal observation of what I saw happening right here in Minneapolis. And then when I began to look at what was happening kind of in other parts of the world, I saw the same pattern. You know, and the neighborhoods, I think, have been overlooked as sort of a way to get things done in our society.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a little different take on Champaign. I do think it's moving forward some,
mm-hmm.
but I think that the planning that's been done over the last few years has really not been good for our neighborhoods. One of the things that was done, they had called a meeting a few years back in our neighborhood about to give the vision for Champaign. And one of the things they had in their visions was moving all the churches out to the edge and not having them in town. And we were actually meeting in a church in town. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, gee, I like to have churches where people can walk to them. And the planner that was running the meeting said, well, that's not what people feel. And it was like, well, not and nine out of people. And I think it's really good to have things like churches and shops and pubs in the neighborhood. We have one neighborhood pub that I know of in Champaign, and every few years the city tries to shut it down. Mm. And it's, you know, it's a perfectly respectable little place where you can go and get a lunch or, you know, a beer after work or whatever. And boy, they are just determined that they don't like that. And instead, we're getting huge developments on the north part of town, on North Prospect, and they're getting great big tax incentives for that. And the neighborhoods, it seems to me the vision that Champaign has is that neighborhoods are just residential.
Yeah.
Where when I grew up, we could walk someplace and get milk. We could walk someplace and get bread. And that does not seem to be something that Champaign likes. They like the inner core where you can go in there, but you have to drive and park. I mean, that's, I walk downtown Champaign, but it's about 2.5 miles, and most people in our neighborhood can't do that. So I'll just be quiet and hear what you have to say about that.
I'm so glad you called in.
No, I think you raised some really important points
yeah.
because I mean, one of the themes of my book is that every neighborhood really ought to have a neighborhood business district, a place that people can walk to meet some of the basic needs of their life. And that includes a pub, a place to go. I mean, oftentimes, drunk driving is a serious problem in our culture, and it's treated entirely as a drinking problem. But indeed, historically, there was the corner tavern, you know, where if maybe you had one too many, you know, the worst thing that happened was you might have fell down on the way home instead of, you know, hitting a family in their station wagon. I mean, so that's an important issue. It's interesting here in Minneapolis, we've kind of gone the opposite direction with really good results. Minneapolis once had that kind of same theory, is that the best neighborhoods are ones that are almost entirely residential. And we have a lot of old business districts that were really kind of suffering, little corner shop stuff. The last couple of years, there's been a real renaissance. A lot of coffee shops have come in, and they actually changed the liquor laws here. For most of the last century, it's actually been illegal to serve any kind of beer or wine, you know, even in a restaurant that was off in a neighborhood. And they changed that around. We've seen a great flowering of kind of new pubs, new taverns, new bistros, new coffee shops. And I think it's really been one of the exciting things happening here that kind of has people, you know, excited about living in the city once again rather than moving to the suburbs. But one of the points I make in my book is that a neighborhood really is just another word for the name village. That, you know, villages are where people kind of live kind of a tightly knit lives, and there's a sort of a center where they can kind of gather. And the best urban neighborhoods, whether in New York, whether in San Francisco, whether in Paris, Rome, or whether in Champaign-Urbana, also have that kind of quality of the village, where there's sort of a center, and where life is kind of integrated, where you can kind of shop. If you're lucky, your job might even be within walking distance. And that's the big trend, I think, in urban planning, really throughout the world. And I would think that Champaign would want to not sort of drive all the businesses out of the neighborhood, but to keep them there.
Yeah. Well, it's great if you can walk. If you can walk to the library, you know, it's not always possible. There's a lot of things you have to hop on the bus or you have to take a car. But
yeah,
it is great if you have a park, if you have some things, some public spaces. This is what you're all about, Jay.
Yeah.
If you can have a public space, and maybe it's a particular somebody's particular garden in your neighborhood, or
yeah,
a playground, or
yeah,
you can set up, you know.
That really changes people's lives when there's kind of a focal point, a center in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Urbana, and I walked downtown all the time. It was sort of sometimes I had a reason to go there, and sometimes I just kind of wanted to go because that's where the action was.
Well, Urbana's looking up, too.
Good.
Let's take a call from Urbana now. Line one. Hi.
Hi. I have lived in several cities in Illinois and chose this one, Urbana, to return to in retirement. And I'm sad to say that Urbana is not living up to my expectations.
Mm.
And I'm saying that because I would like other people in Urbana and leadership to take note of what's happened in that South Urbana area, Philo Road. And, you know, there's abandoned stores, there's Section 8 housing, and the neighborhood concept is really taking a hit. And I think if people who are listening could, you know, could hear that and, you know, take a look at the development of new multifamily housing compared to the development of things where people can meet and feel safe. And I think your show has just presented an opportunity for me to express my wish that Urbana could stay as it was 30 years ago when I lived here before.
Well, thanks for the call. And I do think that people in that Philo Road area are working on the problem. Don't you?
Yeah, they're working on the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're trying, very trying. But I think the leadership that's needed in some ways is to help younger, less educated people to appreciate what they have, and to help them to feel more a part of, you know, the beautiful benefits of Urbana. And I think there's just a lot of young people here who don't have that experience in their own growing up, who may need a little help from, I'm not sure who, maybe from this gentleman who could come down and maybe help educate the new
I would be happy to come down and talk about the power of neighborhoods. I actually used to bag groceries at the Eisner store right on Philo Road. I don't know if that's still there or not. But
no, it's gone.
No, long gone.
Yeah. It's interesting. Right. I mean, you mentioned multifamily housing, and it's not really a question of single-family housing versus multifamily housing. It's just a question of actually how it's all done. If new developments are put up with huge parking lots on the street, if they're kind of done on a gigantic scale, then oftentimes they're going to be less hospitable to the surrounding, you know, to the surrounding neighbors, and often when they're done on a large scale, too, then when they fail in this and leave this big hole. Whereas it sounded like in downtown Champaign, it was like kind of small businesses, independent businesses, kind of one at a time. That's actually a much more, I think, reliable way to develop rather than kind of doing the big mega development and then suddenly, you know, then suddenly you have this huge hole.
That's right. And, you know, the mega development, I'm pretty sensitive to the idea that people who have a low income should have a good place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But unfortunately, there are people that are attracted to that kind of neighborhood that have caused lots of problems in Urbana lately that make other people frightened mm-hmm. and don't want to walk. And don't want to have a bench out front.
Mm.
And so I think partly this, you know, I think part of this problem, again, lies with leadership and in educating young people, young parents, young families about, you know, their responsibilities mm-hmm. as good neighbors.
Well, one of the problems, if you look nationally, too, is the whole notion of the concentration of poverty. When all of the low-income people, you know, many of whom are struggling in one way or another, certainly all are struggling financially, when they're kind of concentrated in one neighborhood, then sort of the problems tend to multiply there. Whereas when poverty is not so concentrated, then suddenly there can be more of a kind of uplifting spirit where people can be kind of, see more possibilities because not everyone around them is struggling in the same way.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is Jay Wall Jasper, Urbana native, author of the Great Neighborhood book, a do-it-yourself guide to placemaking. And we're talking about neighborhoods this afternoon, about communities. And we're doing it on the one and only day of our February pledge drive. And alongside me in the studio, we're going to take a moment here to talk with Mike Sola, one of our weather forecasters here at WILL. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Celeste. And I just want to add that Focus 580, Afternoon Magazine, David Inge, Celeste Quinn. It's almost like a daily town hall meeting where you can express yourself, where you can find out what's going on in the community. And it's a wonderful feeling to be part of a locally produced show, or I'm part of the station that produces that show. But again, community is very important, and you don't have to track down any special zip codes to find the ownership here. It is you. You are the owners of this station, and we need your support to recoup some of the money that the state has stopped funding us with. So we're looking for $80,000 today. We have reached $32,355 so far, but only 7 new members. Let's push that new member total up. And I brought in a couple gifts. Again, it's Fat Tuesday. So next 4 calls of support for WILL AM. The first 2 will get the beignet mix, the French donuts. Then we have a Cajun jambalaya mix and a shrimp Creole mix. Again, just a small token of our appreciation for your support. So call 217-244-9455 or toll free at 866-779-9455. Or if you would like to pledge your support online, it is at willpledge.org. So again, let's ring the phones, let's raise the total and keep it rolling on our one-day pledge drive.
Yeah. Try us out. You know, if you're new, if you haven't done this before, this is a great day to do it. And try us out at $52 a year. You'll get Patterns Magazine, which is our program guide. It has all the programming information for AM, FM, and television, as well as features on the programs and on the people you hear and see on WILL. So please, that pledge is very important. Every listener is very important, and every listener who calls in makes a difference. 217-244-9455. 244-WILL. Thanks, Mike. We'll talk with you a little bit later this afternoon.
Very good.
Okay, Mike Sola. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join the conversation by giving us a call, and these numbers are different. These are the numbers to join us with a question, a comment about neighborhoods. 333-9455, that's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-4455. I thank that listener who called in about Urbana, and it brings the question to the table about how do you get something started, and how do you get something done?
Yeah. Well, one of the big mistakes I think that people have made in recent years, particularly, there's been a lot of efforts to revitalize our cities and to really tackle some of these problems about lack of economic opportunity, crime, social decay, and things like that. And so often the people have come in and, you know, the experts, the authorities have come in and here's the solution without really ever consulting the people who live there. And one of the big themes that we talk about at Project for Public Spaces is that the community members themselves are the experts. They know more than anyone else in the world about the particular place where they live. And so it's really important to tap into their ideas. There's some wonderful stories that I uncovered while doing this. They gave me a lot of inspiration and a lot of faith that you can really tackle sometimes what looked like the big in Seattle called Yesler Terrace. And it was a hard luck place. I mean, the drug dealers were essentially kind of running the place. You know, people were sort of terrified to walk out of their homes. And it just really was a place that had all the problems that you think about when you think about social dislocation. And there was a group of grandmothers who lived in Yesler Terrace who got together and decided this is our neighborhood too. And so they set up their lawn chairs in the evenings on Friday and Saturday nights when the drug dealing was going on at sort of its most feverish pitch. And they just sat there, they did their knitting, they told stories, and the drug dealers, when kind of faced, you know, they could stand up to a SWAT team from the police force, but they couldn't stand up to a bunch of grannies, you know, even without knitting needles. And they slunk away. And so Yesler Terrace really was revived. You know, and certainly I don't want to say the problems of drugs in that part of Seattle went away, but by people taking that stand on that street corner, it made a remarkable difference in that place. Another great story from Seattle, this was a couple miles away, a neighborhood called Columbia City. It had been an old independent town, and then Seattle had kind of grown around it and absorbed it. And it had an old downtown that was really struggling. I mean, most of the buildings had sat empty for years. And the neighborhood was kind of frustrated. We'd like some businesses here. You know, what can we do about this? And everything they tried failed. So finally, someone had the bright idea, hey, you know, these windows are all boarded up anyway. Why don't we paint what we'd like to see in these shops and just paint them right on the plywood in the windows? So they contacted a local arts organization, and they actually just painted these murals, you know, making this empty building look a little bit like a ice cream fountain, which was one of them, or a hat shop was another one of them, and things like that. And what is so funny is, you know, the artists were pretty good, and people actually stopped thinking there was an ice cream shop on the corner. And somehow that kind of act of imagination suddenly kind of broke through the dam, and within a year, all those buildings were rented out. And actually the arts group that had painted the murals themselves actually set up shop there. A brew pub had come in there, a restaurant pub, any number of things. I mean, so just sometimes daring to imagine what you want can make a difference in a neighborhood and not listen to all the people that say, you can't do this, you can't have this because you're this kind of neighborhood.
Yeah. Advice for working with city officials, city council members, those folks?
Well, you know, I have the greatest respect for people that, you know, devote their lives to public service. But I think sometimes a mistake that people in neighborhoods make is they ask permission. They ask, what can we do? What will you let us to do? Rather than saying, this is what we want to do. And sometimes, again, the best ideas don't always germinate in City Hall. Sometimes they actually happen when neighbors get together. My favorite example of this is it happened in a city in the Netherlands called Delft. And I'd heard this story. I'd heard, you know, it's the whole idea of traffic calming, which is traffic calming is things you do to the street to kind of encourage the drivers to slow down and follow the speed limit. So for years, I'd heard that traffic calming was born in Delft. And Delft is sort of famous, sort of the MIT of the Netherlands is there, Delft Technical University. So I always assumed that the idea of traffic calming was something that the engineers at the university dreamed up. And then I later heard the real story of how it happened. It was a group of neighbors one night, you know, kind of under the cover of darkness. They were sitting around and saying, we're so tired of these cars speeding down our street, ruining our neighborhood. So they drug out a bunch of old couches, old chairs, old tables, old planters into the middle of the street. And they arranged them in such a way so that cars could still drive along the street, but they couldn't obviously speed down that street. So clearly it's illegal to drag a couch out in the middle of the street. And the cops came. And the cops, you know, looked at the situation and said, well, this is clearly illegal, but it's also a really good idea. And in fact, within a year, the city itself was creating their own version to do the same thing, to say cars can pass through, but they can't pass through at any speed they want to drive. And that was the birth of traffic calming, which has now gone all the way around the world. You probably have something like that in the Twin Cities there. I mean, whether it's, you know, even speed bumps in a parking lot. But, you know, the idea, and if those people had gone to their city council member and said, we'd like to do this kind of thing to slow down the cars, they said, oh, we can't possibly do that. But the fact that they kind of took the action first rather than asking permission made a big difference. And the politicians were smart enough to say, hey, this is a splendid idea. Let's do more of it.
Hmm. Also, it might be a good idea to invite them to the block party.
Exactly. And block parties are no small thing. I mean, it's one of the things we do a big thing here in Minneapolis on National Night Out. In fact, I have something in my book about Rantoul, where they did they do a national night out as well. But that really is a great chance just to know everybody that's on the block, and then you have kind of a connection, and you can, you know, see them walking down the street, and you have something to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, and actually, and what we've found here in Minneapolis is that the ranks of the politicians more and more are coming out of groups of people who are active in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Having neighborhood organizations, formal organizations where people can deal with the problems in the neighborhood and seize the opportunities is a great thing to, you know, really make a difference in where you live.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about National Night Out.
National Night Out, it's done throughout the United States. And it's the first Tuesday in August. It's usually organized by police departments. And it began as a crime-fighting measure, thinking that if people knew their neighbors better, they would be better able to sort of, you know, sort of stop crime. So in Minneapolis, you know, most of the, you know, I think we have one of the highest participation of any city in the country. And, you know, like my son kind of, it's like another version of the 4th of July to him. It happens every year. They block off the streets, which is great fun for all of us, particularly the kids, to kind of be able to set your lawn chair up in the middle of the street where usually, you know, cars are zooming past. It's a greatly liberating experience. You know, we drag out a few grills. Everybody cooks up meat. It's kind of a potluck. People bring desserts, bring salads, bring all kinds of good stuff. And it's really just a party. And sometimes the police members will come by and, you know, talk a little bit about crime prevention things. Oftentimes they'll bring fire trucks by and give kids a ride, but it just is, and it's, you know, it does more than fight crime. I mean, although it's very effective at that, but it also just creates kind of a sense of community. That one night a year, we're all kind of there together, and that kind of carries through for the rest of the year.
Yeah. 4th of July is a great time in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, I remember that. Do they still do the mile run?
Yeah.
In the stadium? Yeah, I remember that.
They do the run, the run walk. Of course, the parade is a huge thing, and the fireworks. And
no, I don't think I've ever, anywhere I've ever been, seen as festive a celebration as the 4th of July in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah. It's a good time.
We used to always get there early on Green Street to watch the parade go down.
Yeah. Well, Lincoln Avenue now is a...
Oh, is it Lincoln now? Okay.
Lincoln Avenue is a great... Yeah, that's probably the main stage,
okay,
so to speak. So, well, you just have to come and visit us.
I do. I'm long overdue.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, good luck with your pledge drive.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Jay Waljasper has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's a senior fellow of the Project for Public Spaces and the author of The Great Neighborhood Book, A Do-It-Yourself Guide to Place Making. And the book is published by New Society Publishers.